We'll call the meeting of the Conservation Partners Program to order. We have looked over the agenda. Is there a motion on the agenda? Any additions or deletions or changes? Hearing none?
Wait.
Oh.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. You had me commenting, but you missed me as a member present. How was the year?
Next minute.
Oh, the minutes, okay, I'll wait till later.
You want to be on the agenda for something?
No. I'm sorry, the minutes, I thought we had that point already.
All in favor of the agenda, did you have it?
Aye.
Okay, agenda approved. We're going to approve the minutes?
We need to add that.
Okay.
Add 2.5, review and approve the minutes.
Okay, you have the minutes in front of you. Go ahead there, Les.
Please put me present for last meeting.
Are you moving approval subject to your...
Yes, I would move approval with that change.
All in favor?
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Noted on the second page, the 2, 3, 4, fifth paragraph, I think it was just a word, Bob Schroeder said the legislature will look, I think the key word that was there, look at.
Thank you, Mr. Schroeder.
I only paid attention to what I was supposed to say.
Any other comments on the minute? All in favor?
Aye.
We are now, we have a few minutes set up for public comment, and we'll let Mr. Becker take care of that.
Let's start with Ed Ness.
You get to be first?
You get to be first, Lance.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, my name is Lance Ness. I'm the president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance, and just here to give you some comments. And probably sometime I should really address the whole board about the history of dedicated funding, but that's another day. I want to give you some thought processes on your project proposals here. As we conceived this whole thing and through many years of discussion with the legislature, our thought process was always that the LOC would always be an independent body, as independent as possible. And that, I mean, that includes, we thought, the ability to hire and fire your own staff, where you're going to be housed, how you actually act amongst yourselves. We'd always envision this similar to the Missouri plan, so that you would be as really as an independent body as possible. That was our conception when we set you off on your road here. We always hoped that you would keep it simple, that you'd get the dollars to local projects. That was one of our key issues here, was getting money out to local groups and using matching dollars wherever possible. And to streamline the process, we didn't want to see 40 pages of paperwork to get a project done. That's kind of the current situation a lot of times. There's just so much paperwork that local chapters just kind of throw their hands up and say, you know, it's just too frustrating to get this all done. So we wanted to keep it streamlined, not to add red tape, and to get these projects out in the land and waters where we can make a difference and make a difference in our future. The projects are validated. They have project audits that you, you consider, you go out and make sure that what you've done is correct. And we all for that. We want to see outcomes. But as we say that, we should consider that some of the projects that you do could take years to complete. In the past, we've always been tied to these two-year bienniums at the legislature and had to force these things to certain agencies' budgets to get these things done. For the first time, you guys actually can do some long-range planning. If it takes 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 years to do a project, you have the ability maybe to do that. So we wanted to give you that consideration as well. And finally, the outcomes may take years to complete. We're talking of 150 years of civilization here in Minnesota, and a lot of damage has been done, and you guys just can't do it in 5 or 10 or even 25 years. Some of your projects are going to take years to show the results. So when people ask about outcomes, I hope they take that into consideration. Some things just aren't going to be overnight. You're not going to see a result tomorrow. And finally, we wanted you to be successful in accordance with the constitutional language and the intent of the voters and the taxpayers and the stakeholders. We're all partners, and we want to make sure that everything that you guys do is beneficial. Now, my group, the Fish and Wildlife Alliance, doesn't ask for money, so you're not going to see me up here asking for a project, but our members probably will be. We're really the policy folks and try to make this thing all work for you. So we're help support you where we can in the legislature, and that's my comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. James M. Mike Carlson.
Well, I don't have my teleprompter, so I'm going to just read my prepared statement off the laptop. My name is James Carlson, president of and attending as the representative of Optima Fish Environmental Consulting. I just had one comment and one question. The question is that as I read the material sent out prior to this meeting, that although the monies are being spent up to a spectrum of up to $42 million, it looks like, that there's still about $12 million that are left over that haven't been assigned. If that's correct, I'm wondering what the plan is for designating those funds that might be different from the process you've gone through already, or if it's going to be a circulation of that process, or if I'm even reading that correctly. Second, I've written Bill Becker in the past, who's graciously offered to pass my comments on to the council. But just for the record here, my comment is that it's not my perception nor a perception shared by those I talk to that this process has been inclusive enough and transparent enough to date, not to contradict the previous speaker, but prior to that 150 years of civilization, there were other people here. And so, particularly with respect to tribes and tribal projects, I don't feel that, I feel that they have contributions and that there should have been outreach to those groups. That should have been initiated by the council. Nevertheless, it feels a bit like a hurry up offense, which I understand with legislative timetables and whatnot it can be, but it feels like there's a lot of people being left out of the loop here. And it's hard for someone outside to know to get their bearings of how to tap these money sitting to things on the landscape. So that those are the things that we come in. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Cordelia Pearson?
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to answer that question about
We certainly can. Yeah. When the LOAC in total made their original allocations, there was only projects that received 7 votes or more, okay, were considered as having moved forward. And the LOAC committee in total meets tomorrow morning, and they will then determine where the balance of those currently allocated funds will go.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I could just add to that. Sir, the council is also directed by the legislature to come up with the next set of recommendations by January 15th of 2010. So starting on April 2nd, we'll begin that process as well. So you and others are certainly welcome to participate in that process, which may have an outlet for the interest that you're describing and others.
Thank you.
Cordelia Pearson.
My name is Cordelia Pearson. I'm a resident of the Twin Cities metro area in the state of Minnesota. I'm speaking just as somebody who worked hard on the campaign with many others in the room here today, spoke with a lot of people about their hopes of the funding to go and how it works. I also have significant experience working with local governments and land stewards on leveraging non-state funds to conserve and restore land throughout the state of Minnesota and also compared to other states. And just a couple of quick notes. One is, think about the land stewards and how to make it most efficient and effective for them so they don't have to come up to the Capitol and spend hours of their time here instead of out on the land caring for the land. Please streamline this process for those applicants. Think about where they're coming from. They have wetlands, they have prairies, they have forests. They do have water quality projects. Please, if you can, make one place for them to apply and let the grant administrators sort them into the appropriate category rather than having separate deadlines and separate grant processes for every single source of funding. Please streamline. And to the extent that that affects who you have managing the funds, please keep that in mind. It might be more efficient, may or may not be, to have a state agency help with the grant administration instead of a nonprofit that isn't going to be dealing with water or other funds. Just keep that in mind. So think about how to make it effective and efficient for the land stewards. The second is, there are other states that have developed criteria that can be converted into maps, and those maps can be used to identify priorities for proactive outreach instead of just reactive, please send us your projects, and then you have to sort out the projects. please think about investing through the Heritage Council or through the Grant Committee in some strategic mapping to identify priority areas for habitat, for water, for other purposes, so that you have the opportunity to cultivate those projects together with nonprofit partners or whoever it might be, so that you have the best results in 25 years to show for it, not just simply a reactive and responsive process. And then finally, land stewards for habitat are distributed throughout the state, and there is as much, if not, there is as much experience within the metro, 7 counties or 11 counties or high-growth Minnesota, as there is throughout the state. Please do not exclude people, agencies, land stewards based on the fact that they might be in a more densely populated area now. Think about where the greatest need is and the potential for protecting nature nearby for our future citizens of Minnesota. Kids who have nature nearby are more likely to value the conservation that that is part of our heritage. Think about them as well as protecting habitat. Think about protecting connecting corridors throughout the metro area, as well as the high-growth Minnesota, to protect more people for future generations. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to make a public comment? Mr. Chair, next on our agenda is Greg. Has a few minutes to visit with us a little bit about conflict of interest or appearance of on administrative bodies for our small grant program.
I got 20 copies. If there are any left over, to the audience wants. I thought it was mostly important for you guys to take a look at. What it is this is from the Department of Administration website. So there are a number of laws that deal with conflict of interest, but as you know, we have a provision now in Chapter 16B. In fact, the statute that created the Start Heritage Council also references that. There are a number of 10A is the public officials, which applies to you, but not necessarily those. But this kind of boils it down, I think, from all the from statutory guidance, and kind of gives a little 4-page overview of what it means. We don't need to go through all of this, but if you look on the second page, you'll see some definitions. You'll see a definition of conflict of interest. There are two types that are talked about here. One is an individual conflict of interest, and then the other one is organizational conflict of interest. What it does is it lays out some possible conflicts of interest, and you can see A, B, and C in the bottom there. I'll go through this pretty fast, and then if you've got questions about specific types of conflict of interest. But the first one is state employer grant reviewer uses his or her status to or position to obtain special advantage benefit to the grantees or grant applicants' time, services, facilities. B is a state employer grant reviewer receives or accepts money or anything else. State employer grant reviewer is an employee or board member of a grant applicant, grantee, or an immediate family member of an owner, employee, or board. So those are kind of the three. And you'll see that the next sentence down below, I think, is real important too, is it talks about volunteer capacity. Because some of you may be involved in volunteer issues. And the grantees may, we're talking about the you've got your own conflict of interest issues, and then whoever the grantor is going to be will have conflict of interest issues that they'll need to deal with. But if there's it states below that that it needs to be in a volunteer capacity, it's case by case basis. It really depends on what the volunteer capacity is. There isn't necessarily a conflict of interest, but one of the things that you'll notice in here, it talks about. If you look again at that definition, it's either an actual or an apparent conflict of interest. It doesn't have to be an actual conflict of interest. If it appears to be a conflict of interest, that can be just as damaging for the grant-making process as it is if there is a conflict of interest. When I've advised members in the past, people have asked me, whether something's a conflict of interest. And I think a rule of thumb that I always let people know is, if you don't want to see it on the front page of the newspaper, don't do it. It would keep a lot of people out of a lot of trouble. People have not taken my advice before, and they ended up in the front page of the newspaper. and I won't say who he was. And then, so you've got your procedures to avoid conflict of interest. I don't know if we need to go over this too much. This is really for the grantor. But basically, what they need to do, because this applies to state employees and anybody with state money that's making grants. So anybody that you assign to make grants would have to follow this. But they do need to make sure where there's an individual conflict of interest that is disclosed. That if there's somebody, they may need to recuse themselves from any activity in the grant process if there is a problem like that. Because the important thing here for the individual conflict of interest is that the person acknowledge it and kind of the process can move on to acknowledging that rather than continuing with that conflict of interest. The organizational conflict of interest is probably a more serious problem because the organization, and you'll see down below, when a grant, bottom of page 3, an organizational conflict of interest occurs when the grantee is unable or potentially unable to render impartial assistance or advice to the state. A grantee's objectivity in carrying out the grants is or might otherwise be impaired due to competing duties or loyalties. And then a grantee or potential grantee has an unfair competitive advantage through being furnished unauthorized proprietary information or source selection information. This is probably that last one is probably the real key because we've had some kind of private discussions I've had with various members about this part because if it'd be like, let's say DNR was the granting agency. Nobody in DNR would really be able to apply for a grant because although they'd have an unfair advantage, they'd be on the inside. You can't have somebody on the inside that knows the ropes better than somebody on the outside who's also applying for this for a grant. That's just it really does cause a problem with an organizational conflict of interest. And in fact, you'll see below for the organizational conflict of interest, you'll see that these are ones that just can't happen. It's not a matter of notification or letting somebody else do it. They just need to be prevented. Number one there. If it's suspected, disclosed, or discovered, they must immediately, for this group, we don't know if they'll be an agency ethics officer or supervisor, but we do know that somebody has to be notified. And in cases where they're suspected or disclosed, the grantee or grant application should be notified of potential conflict and allowed a reasonable opportunity to respond. But here's the solution to both the points. The potential grantee is disqualified, the current grantee's grant agreement is terminated, the grantee is disqualified from subsequent grant awards, the responsibility for the grant or grant program is reassigned to a different state employee. So really, the organizational ones are probably more of a problem in the sense that it really gives one grant applicant quite a bit of an advantage. The individual ones are a problem too, but it seems like it can be resolved by mechanisms that are in place, not the organizational one. I just wanted to give you a brief overview, and I thought this was really helpful. It kind of boiled. If you look at most of the conflict of interest statutes for public officials, or the one for the grant making, they're all very similar in that you're making sure that there's not an actual or perceived conflict of interest. But I thought this did a good job of kind of boiling it down with something that the Department of Administration did recently.
I got two comments. One, if the summary is 4 pages, how long did it start with?
Because it's more than a summary. It's a summary and analysis and kind of boiling down all the different various places where you'll find conflict of interest statutes that apply.
One of the things, and I don't know if you were here yet, Greg, but when we had a little dialogue with some of our grant administrator applicants, and we have Bowser DNR and National Fish and Wildlife Foundation.
To clarify, you had a dialogue.
I did. We did. Yes, I did. I individually did. Yeah. And one of the things that we talked about in our small grants program, which is going to be come up with, I'm going to replay that for the whole group is in our small grants. In the administration of our small grants, we realize that there's going to be some need for some dollars for technical assistance. Okay, so somebody applies for a $100,000 grant, and they put a figure out there that says we're going to allocate $2,500 for technical assistance. Okay, if the DNR, Area Wildlife Manager, was the person they went through for technical assistance and they were reimbursed for that, or if the Soil and Water Conservation District was the organization that the grant applicant went to, and they were reimbursed for that. To me, I interpret that as a direct conflict of interest. Does that make them, if technical providers are reimbursed for their services, then if they were acting in a grant administrator capacity, I see that as a direct conflict of interest. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think you've got some potential problems there. It depends on how it's established. You know, I'm sure John could probably give you on how the board does some of the technical assistance, but generally, I think, the state appropriates specific money. You could appropriate money to an agency to provide technical assistance to grantees, but not make it part of the grant itself. So it's kind of an overall. We do that with the for our reinvest in Minnesota reserve easements, and that the board receives a separate appropriation to help with technical assistance.
But that would assume that we knew where the small grants were going ahead of time. Because how would we know to give BNR or Bowser or any other state agency a certain amount for technical assistance for a program that hasn't been defined as to who's getting the money? Or am I missing something?
Well, if you wanted to provide technical assistance, all I'm saying is you can appropriate technical assistance separately, so it's not tied to the grant. And then these people can provide. I mean, I guess you're going to have some idea who's going to be.
We don't know who's going to apply.
You're going to know who's going to be granting the money. You're going to know who the grant making agency is.
We will make that decision.
And the technical assistance could be appropriate to that grant making agency.
I see what you're saying.
Bob?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Greg, these are terrific. Thank you for putting this together.
I didn't actually put it together.
No, you did better than the rest of it.
Thank you for both copies.
The scenarios are usually the best way to run the line. We had a scenario where DNR were given the responsibility to administer this. There's nothing that prevents us from in laws saying that they are prevented from applying for small grants. To address this automatically, directly, up front, so that there is there's no conflict because they'd be prevented by law from doing so.
Right.
And I think that's something that we ought to consider. The other thought I have is on this issue of technical assistance. The fact of the matter is, though, if DNR were administering this, David was an applicant, or not David, but Joe Schmo was an applicant. Joe is getting the grant. Mm-hmm. He chooses to seek technical assistance from DNR from DNR. DNR is not getting the grant.
Mm-hmm. That's why I said it's open technical assistance.
No, what I'm saying is I'm not sure that we even need to necessarily take that.
We
could. We certainly could.
Except, wouldn't it be that if you were applying for a grant, you would have a line item in there for technical assistance that you would know you're going to?
Sure, that's true.
Well, the other issue is that if the applicant is applying for a land acquisition or a wildlife management roundout where they square off,
right.
The DNR is ultimately going to be the owner of that property. Okay, so even though they're not applying for the grant, if that property ends up under their control, okay, even if the Round Lake Sportsman's Club applied for it, and the Round Lake Sportsman's Club got it, they're going to know who the end result owner of that is, and if that's DNR, that appears to me that could have a conflict.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with
that.
Understand your point.
It could potentially be a conflict because if they're the granting agency and they know that one group was going to donate the land to DNR and another group's not going to donate it to DNR, they kind of lean towards giving it to grants to people who are going to give the land to the state for DNR to manage it, there is a potential for a conflict of interest.
There's a perceived conflict or something else.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure. Are they donating to the state or are we donating to the DNR?
Well, it's the state, but the DNR is our land manager in those things, and so it really, there's a potential of a perceived, as David I think stated, the potential for a perceived conflict in a situation like that.
Mr. Chair, Greg, I'm trying to think of safeguards and mitigating strategies, one of which, of course, would be to prevent DNR, as I mentioned, from being an applicant. Is there any relative value to having the council serve in an advisory capacity to the grant administrator? The grants we talked about before, we can't direct, but we can advise. My instincts tell me that I would be surprised that whoever has got the responsibility would not place a great amount of weight on the conflict. But is there any safeguards from that approach?
I think that that would be helpful. But I don't know that it completely eliminates, depending on it, because since you can only advise, they're still grant-making. And so it would be their decision. Now, that's the big thing on a small grant program, is who makes the ultimate decision about whether a grant is issued to one group or another. And that's kind of what the building needs to roll.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if you're the one who can answer this, but I think somebody else is. We learned, I think, at one of our council meetings about the small grants program at the NR. And my question is, don't they already have a conflict now? If they run a small grants program, the ultimate recipient, perhaps in some of those cases, may be the NR.
I think there's a potential for proceeding. I know what that program you're talking about, I think, only for work on state WMAs. It's a part of it. It's a part of the lottery and new money that goes in. So it's only on state lands, if I remember right.
Just a clarification. When we're talking about the Conservation Partners Program that is periodically funded?
Sure, Bill, I was not. I was talking about the one that we run with the Heritage Enhancement Account money.
Okay.
Now,
is that the guy that came to us?
There is the old Conservation Partners Program, but I don't think that's been funded for a while.
Mr. Chair, I'm Wayne Sims with the DNR Office of Management and Budget, and I am involved with that programming. We do have currently, we did get a 2008 appropriation of $150,000, so we do have a couple dozen active projects right now under that program, Conservation Partners Program. Most of those, I don't think any of the current ones are going to work on DNR property, but we have had some in the past that have gone to, say, a local sportsman's club or something like that, but they're doing the work, restoration work, on DNR property. We don't have the DNR Fish and Wildlife people involved in the evaluation and the ranking process, so we're in a separate. We're kind of the bureaucrats up in the financial section there. So we don't have any criteria that really distinguishes between state land or county land or private land for that matter. So in the case of that particular program, we think we've got enough separation from the DNR people that will actually be, I suppose, sort of overseeing work that's being done in the wildlife management area, for example.
Mr. Chair, sir, the technical assistance, I presume, is occasionally provided by DNR staff.
It would be almost every case if they're doing it on state wildlife management land. I mean, those people are going to want to know what they're doing. The DNR people are going to want to know what's going on. Now, whether or not they would have reviewed any of that proposal before it even gets submitted, sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't. But from our point of view, we don't contact those wildlife management area people. They're not involved in the decision-making process in any way.
So, Mr. Chair, the point I was trying to make is we have a program in business where the concerns have either been addressed or acknowledged and continues.
Well, we also have another program in DNR that it is with the Heritage Account money. That's on all WMA. I mean, that's basically the Heritage Account money. They're small grants to groups who work on WMA lands.
Okay. And is the distinction there the appropriation directs the work to be done on state land?
Yes.
So it's okay.
Did you have a comment?
I'm Leslie Tannehill. I manage the Heritage Enhancement Grant Program. And I think part of the distinction is that it's clearly stated in the grant guidelines that this money is for work to be done on state land. We also do have, we have applicants apply in a parallel application process through our project planning that our wildlife managers do, because as the land managers, we have certain mandatory requirements. We have to ensure all of our projects, like the way the land purpose allows that work, and we need CIPO and any other land requirements, stormwater permits, anything like that. We have a whole bunch of requirements we have to meet before we can center. And so we need those area managers' involvement in order to have those things done.
Anybody have any more questions for Ray? Oh, we have one more. We had one of the individuals asked whether these grants were going to be taxable to the recipient. If they are a for-profit entity, is the grant money taxable to them?
That's an IRS thing. I don't know.
Absolutely, unless they have expenses to offset if they're a profit on it. No question.
Any gain they would do with that, it would be taxable.
If they have something left after the expenses, it's taxable income.
If we're doing a small grants program, well, I understand.
Just one more question on the conflict. Is it appropriate to say then that if a grant applicant is not part of the selection process, that if the selection process is done by an independent party from the applicant, then once you give them money, they should be able to do what they want to do?
They should, as long as they're in the grant agreement, yes.
Right. So, I mean, I'm just looking at, so let's say DNR is the grant, is making, they're running our small grants program. If somebody else in that case is doing the selection, and they recuse themselves, and so the board then, or the council will take a look at it and say, it's a worthwhile project. They made the selection. They're no longer in the selection process.
Yeah, the important thing is just to keep the selection process away from the people who are involved in receiving the grant.
We were actually thinking in the small grants arena of requiring, as part of the grant application, Greg, where the person requesting the funds would either go get a letter of support from a fisheries manager, an area wildlife manager, or a soil and water conservation district as a prerequisite to even applying for the grant. So, I mean, if we want, and the reason for that is we're trying to get some biological background, science on the ground, so that when the project comes, we know that it's been looked over, it's been perused, and somebody that's knowledgeable says, yeah, that's a good project. So we don't get 500 applications for projects that have a 0% chance of being funded.
There could be some potential in doing that. You're almost better when it's being vetted later that's determined rather than before or being a prerequisite to applying. Just because there could be some perceived issues if there's somebody doing some pre-screening.
Depending on who's the grant administrator.
Yeah.
Okay. Any more questions for Greg? Thank you again for coming on your Sunday night. Thank you.
That's good.
We have three presenters tonight. The first one of those is the Board of Soil and Water Resources. Water and Soil Resources, we have about a half hour set up for those presentations. So in your comments in the 10-15 minute range, for sure.
Thanks for having us. I know there was some discussion about what we do at the previous meeting when we weren't here, so I wanted to something else to try and clarify some of that. I'm John Jasky. I'm sorry. I'm the director of the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and just a little bit of a background for all I have. I'm our organization. We're a very small agency in comparison to DNR, for example. We carry out our programs through our local governments, the Soil and Water Conservation District, Water District, County. They are our managers of grant programs at a sub-level, as well as carrying out projects in some portion. Sometimes it's from A to Z, sometimes it's just A and B. We have a board that appointed by the governor, and we operate with the process where we have monthly meetings and we do all of our business, you know, public notice, and all, when we have to go through that process. We have committees like this group does, and that's where we operate our organization. So to give you a little background too, we met Thursday, was it Thursday? Yeah, DNR and Don came over and the foundation, and we talked about some of the things that we still didn't understand probably well enough to give you a real specific set of ideas and alternatives and proposals. So But that said, we are here just to kind of give you some ideas, some concepts. At least that's what I'm going to be able to do today. Maybe you'll hear more from others, have more questions collectively. But that's the background. And I went real low-tech here only because that's all I had time for. Maybe it'll work better anyway. But here's the next to just trying to diagram this process and understand it. We have not participated in these discussions up until basically last week when we were invited to come here and kind of give some kind of overview of how we would play a role if the role is revealed itself. A couple of things, you know, one of the things that we do very much have in common is we'd like to inspire and build the capacity, interest, and support for conservation as low as the lowest level possible. That's what we do. We, you know, in the clean water arena, in the conservation arena, in the soil conservation, water quality, we do that at the lowest level of our local governments because they connect with the people. They connect the science through their local plans to the people, and that's the strength of what system brings. There's also some other strengths that allow us to leverage federal partnerships with USDA in particular, as well as the Army Corps of Engineers and some others. So that's the strength that that system brings. We also have a very strong system in place to report results. Now, you know, we probably have to make that even better given some of the legislation we've seen about outcomes. And people want more and more specific detail, but we have a system in place for projects once they're funded, built, and then completed, we can audit them and then report back to actual conservation on the ground examples of water quality benefits, et cetera, that come out of those projects. So let me just walk you through this you know, hand-drawn piece here. The grand steps, I mean, the first step was to understand where all those pieces are. And when we talked with DNR and with the foundation, we also tried to understand there were some sub-steps to some of these as well. And who plays those different roles is, you know, yet to be determined. The diagram on the right is probably where I would just direct your attention to begin with. And a lot of these still have question marks, at least in our mind, about how they might work. We understand the OHC and the legislature is going to write a bill, it's going to appropriate money, and then off we go under the legislature. They'll set some conditions on that, and the OHC has expressed a role in having some advisory capacity as those small grants, you know, roll themselves out. One thing I learned earlier this evening, or at least I heard, was if this program is focused on public lands, I don't believe we have a role in actually carrying out the projects because our agency is focused on private land. You see in that summary, that's where we focus our work with private landowners. And if you think that this is really about simply either acquiring public land or doing projects on public land, I think you need to work with the public land managers primarily. Now, if there's an issue with conflict of interest where the grant-making infrastructure that we have can be utilized, you know, we can give that some consideration too. I know that's probably one thing all of us have, you know, DNR, us, and the foundation, we all can run machinery, you know, that's the easy part, to be honest. The hard part is when you get starting things on the ground and making sure things are done right, and you got a problem here, you need a contact there, and that's where you get the real work coming into play. So that's just, I want to put it out in front, because if we're doing public land projects, you know, we probably don't have a role in doing any of the work at all, and probably have not a real strong role in making any decisions. So the model you see here was presuming that some portion of the funding would be going to a more private lands focused approach, but the concepts, I guess, maybe aren't all that much different. It's just that our role would be, I think, different.
Can I just interrupt and ask you a question? So, to clarify, are you saying that if half of the money ultimately were to go to public land projects and half to private land projects, you're not excited about administering it because it's not on all private land, or are you saying that your expertise is private land and public land is another animal?
No, I guess I'm correct. What I meant to say is that if there's a private land piece of the small grants program, that we can play a role in. But if the small grants program is envisioned to either be public land acquisition or projects on public land, then our role would not be lined up, at least the way we've been doing business in the past with those kinds of projects. The private lands piece, then we may be able to play a role in a bigger way.
Because what I'm envisioning, and maybe everyone else is envisioning something else, which is possible, is somebody is going to take this pot of money that we set aside and look at a multitude of projects that come in from around the state that meet the criteria that we've set up and say, you know, there's more bang for the buck here than here, and this one's private, this one's public, doesn't matter. Ultimately, it's about getting the dollars into the ground to do the most good. And the administrator of this project isn't administering the actual projects as much as administering the getting the money to the recipients who would do the projects. Does that fit with your understanding, and is that something you guys would be interested in? Assuming that I'm understanding what everyone else is thinking.
If there is a private land component of this, however big or small it may be, then that's something that we can do. That's what we do in a fairly big way.
When you say do, do you mean put the money to work or grant the money to organizations that would do the work?
The way we do it now is we put the money to the organizations that do the work. We provide the oversight and some level of technical assistance. And the other organizations, the local organizations, actually are the project sponsors. And they do the work. We do not do the work. We do not get the money. The money goes to them, and they actually pick the projects at the local level. We don't identify discrete projects, at least most of the programs.
Jim? John, so this work you're doing on private land, is it perpetual, some kind of perpetual easement, or, I mean, how... If we're going to put this money in private land, we want some assurance that it's going to be, you know, perpetual. So even this private land would have to have some kind of a program or easement for it to be.
I should point out that this program would be different. A couple things. That's the main one, is that the projects themselves would have to have a permanency to them with a protection mechanism, meaning there being a deed restriction or an easement. Those are probably the two main ways you approach that. So, yes, it would be different. The cost share or the match is different. I mean, you've got different things. It would be different than things we do right now, but the mechanisms, the machinery would be very similar. The conditions would be different.
Mark? Mr. Chair, John, some of these projects, give you an example. We have a private landowner that would choose to donate his land. In the case that I'm looking at, they donated to Pheasants Forever. Pheasants Forever then looked at the property and proceeded to transfer it over to the DNR for a WMA. So it started out to be private land, but it ends up in public. And would you be involved in that process?
We could be involved in doing the work on that land if it was in private ownership. We do not buy land in fee. We buy easements. So if that project, if they already own the project, if President Ferber owned the project, they wanted to own the land, they wanted to do a project on that land before they sold it or turned it over to DNR, that would work. That would work. That's a private landowner.
But some of these lands, I would foresee, are going to be fee title in the transference. Would you, in the grants?
If the goal is, in the very short term, to turn it into public land, it seems to me you want to work with the party that's going to be the land manager for that site. Because they're the homeowner. It's like you want to do a project in someone's house or build a house for someone, you want the ultimate owner of that house to have a very strong role from beginning to end as much as you can. So I would say it's intending to be or is about public land ownership and fees, and that's something that others are better set up to do than we are.
Question on your. I'll give you an example of another project. A local wildlife management area unit. There's a local group that is kind of taking over responsibility, kind of adopted it, and puts a lot of their money onto this WMA. So they are looking for an opportunity to get $5,000. They would like to find a way to ask for $5,000 so they can go and plant trees this year. And this is on state land, but it is an organization asking for the money. And are you saying that because it's on state land, this would not work good for you to hold the pot of money and then issue the check to them to do that?
You know, what I would say is we could certainly use this. It's very much the same, except that you would have to get the landowners to agree to that, right? And which is a state, right? So you have to, the DNR has to agree with it. So you'd have to get a approval letter, and then be some expectation, because the DNR is the landowner, the homeowner, so to speak. So they're going to have to be watching that project so that it gets done the most effective way, and it's not going to have a problem in any way for their land management responsibility. So. Yeah, we can do that, but we couldn't do it without the land manager being involved.
Correct.
Mr. Chair, I've got a couple of questions for John. John, what's your overhead? What would you imagine?
Well, that's a good question. For these grant projects, we have a number that goes from basically 5 to 20. Yes, and the 20%, and you can't go above that, the 20% includes, everything from the grant, the advertising, the solicitation process to get the word out, to a pre-evaluation to make sure it's got some possible eligibility. And then that probably falls in the, I have to go back and look at it a little bit different, but somewhere between 5 and 10, let's say, is that level of effort. And then the other 10% is really for the, we call it technical assistance, the pre-design work. They actually maybe design the project for that particular landowner, laying out the waterway or laying out the tree planting, the specs for that. So it depends on each project, but it's somewhere in those ballpark numbers.
The audit, what about the after the fact?
The audit, and we have we have to, yes, it is.
Chair, just a couple of quick questions here. Do you guys manage any land? Do you have ownership of any land?
We have temporarily, but we've always intended to give it to someone else, and DNR has been the recipient in a couple of cases. On the project, we built wetlands for the purpose of mitigation. We turn them over to a pre-arranged deal with DNR. So only temporarily and very limited in terms of fees. We have many, many easements, thousands of easements.
I guess, Greg, I was just thinking, is ownership a threshold conflict consideration? That's what I was trying to get to. If they don't ultimately own the land, or the beneficiaries of ownership, as in the case would be for the NR.
Well, it would seem to keep them conflict of interest a little more often.
Yeah. And, Mr. Chair, just a couple questions. John, we've got, I think we all appreciate what Bowser does. I think we've probably all heard that, sometimes, gosh, there's an awful lot of waste. I mean, I'm looking at this list that we've got here. SWC, watershed districts, county water, wetland programs, you've got 17 member boards. If you get a grant from the legislature to run a small grants program, one of the things we're interested in doing is making sure this is streamlined. Does every project have to go through how many steps before it actually gets approved?
The way our projects get approved is our board makes a decision to allocate the money, but it goes on a formula-driven basis to the local level, and it goes right there. And they actually pick the projects based on the priorities that they've established in their local water plan and the evaluation of projects that have been submitted or submitted. The actual selection of projects happens at a local level, at the county board level, at the water district level. They're all, whatever the program is going to, they make the selection of the projects.
And then does it roll back up to your board for a final decision?
No.
Thank you.
John, and maybe this is self-evident, but is your main focus soil and water conservation, or is it fish and wildlife habitat? Do you have expertise in fish and wildlife habitat, or is that secondary to your main purpose?
Very much secondary. I forgot to mention that is one of the, we do not have you know, expertise in fisheries, you know, wildlife habitat, at least, you know, in a big way. Forestry is very limited, you know, so our, we do not have that kind of habitat expertise in-house. And we would find a way, if we were asked to do this, to have that provided by others.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So it'd be a pretty fair assumption that the clean water portion of the amendment, constitutional amendment, would be a better fit for you, administration, versus the conservation.
That's, I think that's fair when you talk about going from agency. The only thing, again, that I would mention is if we were to play a role in some way to help with conservation amendments, we would be willing to do that, but habitat is not something that's central to what our organization does. That's what the DNR does in the state.
Anything else? If there are no other questions, do you have anything else you want to share with us?
Well, no, I just believe, you know, that I live on a city lot, you know, it's about 100 by 50, and I grew up on a farm in central Minnesota, and a city lot is smaller than my dairy farm. I used to know cows, and this weekend I was up there yesterday. I went and talked to a couple of neighbors about it. I said, how much do you know about this? You know, just for the hell of it, you know. And actually, 2 out of 4 heard about it, which was surprising. In the middle of nowhere, Minnesota, you know.
Do you know who you
are? Yeah. I am here to help. They run our farm, yeah, because we don't. But, and they said, yeah, we, you know, we think that sounds pretty good, whatever it is. That's what they said. I mean, because I'd like to get outside, you know. And then I asked my neighbors in the city, you know, for many more to pick them to go by. And really, only a couple of about 10 that I asked really knew about it, you know. And so that's going to be another challenge, is to make sure we can find a way to get to people, you know. And that's, we'll be helpful with that as much as we can, whether we're involving us directly or not, because we do have those connections with the local communities, so we can find a way for them to get to understanding and help promote it and get the community to buy into this or understand it. That would really be, I think, long-term a real bonus to build that ethic and that understanding into the local community and the local officials. So, yeah, that's something that will help you do no matter what path you take. So,
quick question.
Yeah, I'm a little confused on on the major program WRP that's coming. Is that primarily being administrated by NRCS?
No, it's a partnership. We're equal or more so, but that's not a grant program. That is a conservation easement program where we actually solicit projects, and all the projects are picked, you know, in advance by a scoring system, a statewide scoring system, and then we go out and do that through basically agreements with individual landowners, and the soil and water districts provide, you know, technical assistance in that capacity. That we've done very, very well for a very long time. But it's we do have grant programs that do non-easement projects, okay, a grass waterway, a windbreak, sometimes a reforestation project, a small one on private land, small impoundment, those kinds of things. We have grant programs that do those kinds of projects too that aren't permanent. They're under a contract that are somewhere between 10 and 20 years.
John, one last question. Our total council has already received some feedback from various organizations and groups, and legislators have said that we are not being open enough, that we're not getting the word out to people across Minnesota. And how could Bowser or Storm Water Districts help make sure that everybody in all communities get a chance to hear about this?
Yeah, that's good. But that's kind of what I was thinking about is, you know, one thing that they do is they have, you know, regular local media and mailings and things that they work with, you know, day to day to work with all these private landowners, you know, and the cities that, you know, in the metro area too, because they have a very strong connection there. And that's why whatever the alternative is you end up utilizing, we can help with that, and we will help with that to the extent possible. Communicate to all those people what this is, how to engage in it. So we'll add our communication infrastructure onto whatever else you end up deciding to do and get you as the best possible projects that people can do.
And that's about 91 offices around.
Yeah, so there's one in every county, and they're, you know, and those local officials meet regularly, the county boards, the soil and water districts. So they're in touch with people. I mean, they know that. They're elected officials and they're out there talking to everybody all the time, you know, in the community. So if we can help them communicate what you want to accomplish and how to do it, then that'll be paying dividends, I'm sure, someday down the road.
How often do you have a state meeting? Do you have a state organization meeting? Maybe somebody from the council should go there and just give an introduction sometime.
Yeah, there are annual, you know, they have annual meetings of all of them that come to St. Paul or Duluth, sometimes to Rochester, and they're typically in the fall. So, yeah, absolutely. We'll do that day in, day out for 25 years.
Yeah, but what about more questions?
Oh, our board meets here. Yeah, we meet monthly. In fact, last came to one meeting. Bill's coming to our meeting this coming month. So, yeah, we do have monthly meetings.
Just one quick question. What are the parts to... the grant program is going to be inventory and mapping. You have the capability through the GIS system to do all that right now?
Yeah, we actually, the cities all share that data. Now we have a deli where all the data is housed, and every agency, actually everybody in the state can actually get most of the same data now without...
Are you using the Google Earth software?
I mean, that's for presentations, yes. That's more of a presentation tool than a data tool. We actually have data tools that are even much more detailed and complete than that piece of software. But that software helps people understand and interpret the information that underpins it. So, yes.
Just a quick comment on the appropriation that was recommended, the $1 million appropriation for your GIS system. This probably wasn't really discussed with you thoroughly.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that was, to be honest. I still don't know.
Okay.
Thanks for your time, and all of you sitting here, if you got a question for me or
later. We want to thank you for coming on a Sunday night.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Appreciate you coming. Our next presenter is a representative of the DNR. Or two? Or three?
I'm Wayne Sames with the local grants program. Leslie Tannehill is with our official MLS division, and she works on another grant program she mentioned earlier that deals with projects on state criminal wildlife management areas. And then Pete Square is with our official MLS division. So we're basically, I guess, kind of... We're sort of in the position of probably having as many questions about what this proposed grant program might look like and working with them as you are. And so we don't really have any particular proposal or anything of that sort. I think we did get a few things sort of in the discussion we had before the meeting here. We had you know, a few questions that we went over, and that kind of helped us, I think, to understand things a little bit better. I think Pete has a few notes that sort of reflect some internal discussions that we've had up to this point. They've been pretty brief, and, you know, we haven't, internally, we just really don't know exactly what this program would look like, and because of that, we're not sure what DNR's potential role might be. We're pretty sure that, particularly if you're talking about public lands, if much of this grant money would go to projects on public lands, we're pretty sure DNR is going to be a player in that in some way. Perhaps it would be more in the technical assistance area. That would obviously depend on who's actually administering the program and so forth. But we do have experience in administering different grant programs that deal with fish and wildlife habitat. We've got quite a few years of experience doing that, and we obviously have the technical experience on the staff, the wildlife management people out there, and so forth. So that's kind of where we're beginning from. We're, and Pete, I don't know if you wanted to maybe mention a few of the more specific kinds of issues that we've come up with so far, and I know it's kind of open up for discussion.
Thank you. Pete Square, Fish and Wildlife, Mr. Chief with the Fish and Wildlife Division. We had a discussion on Thursday with John and with Don and us. We had some questions, and we wanted to talk about, earlier we talked with Scott about some of those questions we had. Public-private, you know, is it public land management or is it private land management? Which one's that? We have a strong role, as you know, in public management. We manage 1.3 million acres of WMAs. If it is, in fact, a private arrangement, is it permanent? And John, I think, mentioned his role in the private sector. Is it permanent? How do you go about getting that permanent protection?
along with permanent protection, is what are the expectations of long-term monitoring? We go out there, we monitor the project, make sure the grass is seeded, but what happens 10, 15, 20 years down the line? Are there expectations on a grant administrator or a land manager for the long-term piece of that habitat? That being said, when we started asking these questions on Thursday, we started thinking about a proposal, and we heard that maybe there's some time to talk about that proposal. But at this point, there is no grant proposal or us as administrator at this time. A lot of questions out there. We want to talk a little bit more with you guys about what our strengths are, what our needs are, even, and what role we might play. We agree with some of the discussions about the technical assistance. If you're going to do a house project, you definitely are going to talk to the kitchen. If you're going to fix your kitchen, you're going to talk to the person who's going to do the work on the kitchen in order to see what their needs are. I think that's just a piece of the puzzle. Technical assistance is part of that. I will say, there's been some discussion on that technical assistance after the grants have been put together, but there's technical assistance in putting the proposal together as well. And if this is a public land management tool, public land, there's a lot of public land in the state. We're not the only players in the public land management. We own 1.3 million acres, but there's also the federal government, there's the county government, there's the municipalities. There's other, and we recognize that. So we don't want to be saying that we are the public land manager as the DNR. What our needs are, I think, is we want this program to be successful as you do. We feel that this program is consistent with our mission. We are a habitat manager. We're out population managers, and we want access to those resources. We want to have the best resource out there for access, and that is part of our mission. Another part of our needs is accountability. Assuring the money is spent in accordance with the applications, and also having those measurable outcomes and reporting those measurable outcomes. And I think this program, if we are a partner, and we will be a partner regardless of what happens, this is what we're looking for out of a grants program. Some of our strengths, I think that Wayne has hit on them and John has hit on others. We have an infrastructure with DNR staff. We have professional habitat managers, population managers, trained in wildlife and fisheries biology in over 60 area offices. We also have program staff looking at farmland habitat, forest habitat, wetland habitat, which would, I think regardless of what happens, will play into this program somehow. We don't know what the level, but we do have that expertise. Some of our strengths, another one of our strengths is we have had experience with the WMA Heritage Enhancement Program. We've seen what happens with the smaller clubs, we've seen what happens with the larger clubs. It is specifically for habitat projects on WMAs, so it is restricted in that manner, but I think we've got some history there that I think we can share with this group, and I'm sure you'll have questions on some of those aspects. Like I said, in closing, regardless of who administers this program, the land managers will be a part of it with technical assistance. And right now we don't have a proposal. We can work on one, whether there's a conflict of interest or not, we can work through some of those things. But I think the key parts of the program are setting priorities and make sure they're clear priorities, having some evaluation criteria and drill them down as much as you can. Whoever's going to be doing the administration is going to have to drill it down even farther so that we can answer the questions to those who are not successful and help them along. And then make sure that those are implemented and administered with the highest of accountability standards and making sure there's grass on the ground.
Questions? Mike?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Pete, I think it was you that when you were before the council a couple of meetings ago, the question came up about capacity for additional grant making. Right now we're looking at $3 to $4 million potentially a year. If in fact that happened tomorrow, what would you have to do internally to be able to address that capacity? It's not just you, Pete, we got land manager.
We talked a little bit about that internally. We don't have any hard and fact figures down yet. We've got some ideas. We talked about administration beforehand, and it really depends on what a group really wants, this group wants as administration. Is it a simply pass-through grant? Is there evaluation? Is there monitoring? Are we visiting every site? Are we visiting every site over $10,000? So it really depends on what type of administration is necessary. Bare bones, I think we've got to have a few people to administer the grants, to take in, to request, to solicit, to field those applications, and to get them back out and visit these sites.
So Pete, just to clarify, those would be two additional people, or are you talking about people from within in the DNR now?
I think there's a pretty good potential that it would be additional, but again, the qualifiers, it depends on how many grants. We actually, in looking at the amount of money that was at least potentially talked about, we could see a couple hundred additional applications, or actually hundreds of applications and a couple of hundred additional grants. If that actually happened, that would strain our present ability.
And if you get that grant over a couple of years, you've got 100 the first year, you've got 100 the second year. By the time they're all completed, you may have at one point 200 to 300 active grants.
So, Mr. Chair, just to follow up, and it was really a follow-up to last question to John. So how does that translate to administrative costs? What percentage of grant making would be consumed through administrative?
I think if we want an accountable, sound program, it's anywhere from 5 to 10%. And that's a range. That's a ballpark. We can drill down on proposals and talk with our administration about what they support as well.
Historically, that's kind of, for my particular program, that's about the range that's been. Our last appropriation was $150,000. We had $10,000 of that for administrative purposes. I would say, though, that in some of the cases where we have had administrative dollars appropriated to help us out there, it hasn't always covered the cost. The other big cost that we need to think about is not just the cost of actually administering the grants part of it, but if a lot of this work is going to be done on DNR wildlife management areas, maybe not all of it, but certainly a significant part of it, maybe, that is going to be a workload factor for those wildlife managers out there too. So that sort of thing has not been figured into the requests that we've made in the past, at least that I've made in the past.
Wayne, just to clarify, that 5-10% does not include our area manager staff and saying helping an organization put a proposal together or reviewing that proposal or following through and implementing and monitoring that program or that application. And I would suppose that there's not a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service person here, but I would assume that these type of projects would go for WPAs and those type of projects as well. They will have some technical assistance as well that they will be the organizations I'm speaking, the applicants.
And Mr. Chair, let me know you can ask this question. So, just to drill down, if you add new acreage, let's assume it's acreage that's not additional to a pre-existing location. You have some general sense about the cost associated with that. Additional cost for administration.
For administration, grants or land?
Yes. Yeah. You're going to add another.
It's just incorporated. We don't, just because we get a new domain, we don't get extra dollars for management necessarily.
But there are real costs.
This is the point with the Habitat Conservation Partnership. I've worked with that before. And there is money going out to some of the partners there for acquiring land. DNR has also requested money and seed money for both initial development of that land, which we bring up to our standards, such as to make sure if we get bare ground, it's got some kind of cover crop on it, to make sure we get boundary surveyed, make sure we get boundaries posted. Just anything we need to get that piece up to our standards. And it also includes some professional services fees for our land acquisition staff to cover things like the transfer of lease. Surveys could go under there, so that helps us cover our costs and we don't have any short-term budgetary problems with that.
So just to follow up, so that's all part of the grant, that those costs you just talked about of restoration costs and whatever. So you're administering the grant and you're directly granting that to yourself?
No. This is, for example, the example given, Habitat Conservation Partnership. We have, Pheasant for Everybody Flint gets money to acquire land. DNR also has a separate grant from LCCMR that covers that initial development. bringing that land that PFS purchased up to standards, if they're not living so. Then we also have a line item in there that goes to our acquisition folks to cover any acquisition costs, AGPs, fees, like that. So no, I don't believe that would be part of this new grant program. If the group that buys land is interested in bringing it up to standards, sure, include that part of the application price as well. But it will be a cost to us if they buy land.
Any more questions? One in the back.
I have a question. Just reading what the lady just said there. How do these work with the LCCMR? When it's a wildlife management area that is acquired by a conservation group, Pheasants River or Deer River as well, and they apply for the LCCMR grant, and that land is then put into a wildlife management area. How do you folks handle that? Can you explain that again?
The transition from Pheasants River land to DNR land is a statute. If they're buying it with that money, they have to turn it over to DNR. We have a process where they notify our acquisition specialist, a coordinator with that, and he contacts whoever is running, it was me at one point, that grant. We work with Pheasants River on our air manager and decide just what needs to be done with that property to bring us the snuff. Sometimes it's not much, and sometimes it is more. And then we use our area manager puts together a price proposal that we also coordinate with whoever bought that land. Then when they come to, for instance, myself to get the money, which we get through LCCMR, and then we spend the money on the fields that will be done. So by that point, because we know the land will be turned over to us, we can do work on that a little bit early before it's actually officially ours, before the deed's been transferred and everything. So that helps us get a jump on it. But it takes some time to get that done too.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
More questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on this weekend. And our last presenter is Don Waggy from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation.
Thanks. Good to see you all again on a Sunday night. You know, I put together more or less a proposal, and I sent it to Bill on Friday, but I don't know if you guys had a chance to look at it.
I didn't have a chance to distribute it.
So I don't know how you want me to proceed, just kind of review this. I mean, it seems like you guys have heard everything there is to know about us, but maybe I can go through this real quickly, just kind of give you a couple highlights and you can ask your questions. The first thing I'd like to talk about is soliciting proposals, which I think is really critical. I think that you have to put more energy into soliciting proposals than you think is reasonable. You know, you just have to keep doing it because that's how you establish fairness. That's the ultimate way that people think you're fair is if you go out and, you know, really beat the bushes and really try to get as many applications in as you can. There was a comment earlier about dealing with the tribes. I had an experience a few years ago where our foundation hadn't made any grants to any tribes in the state of Minnesota. And so I thought, you know, we've really got to do something about this. So I got a grant from the Bush Foundation to allow me to go out and visit the tribes in Minnesota and the Dakotas. And I went out and literally visited every single tribe that owned a significant amount of land. And we got so many applications that we were able to make hundreds of thousands of dollars of grants in the next year on tribal land, which was my goal. But then, of course, I didn't have any money to go visit the tribes, so now we're not getting proposals again. So solicitation is something you have to keep after and after and after. I think it's critical, and like I said, I think it establishes sort of basic fairness. The second thing I want to talk about briefly is decision making. When I talked to you before, I emphasized how important it was for us to get good input from everyone and that we didn't always have to decide. But it seems in working with this group in the DNR and Bowser in the last couple weeks that it is important for us to decide. And so I just want to make sure everybody knows we can decide. You know, I really like to give broad input, but there's no problem whatsoever in our group making decisions on grants. Managing grants, I think, as I mentioned before, that we're like a grants factory, that we can really, you know, go through them quickly. I'm a little surprised that so many of these, as again over the last couple of weeks I've found that so many of these apparently will be real estate grants. That's not a problem. It is a lot more work because you have to go through, you know, you have to make sure that their appraisals and all that stuff, review the appraisals, et cetera. But again, that's not really a big problem for us. We do that all the time. Let me see. What else can I tell you? Evaluation. You know, we're an outcomes-based organization. We really feel strongly about that. We really believe that evaluation is a critical component of every grant. We do that. We're proud of that.
How would you do this then?
Well, you evaluate. There are two kinds of evaluations that we do. The first one, of course, is every grant. I mean, if we have a outcomes-based or orientation, the grant proposal will have a logic model that you'll follow and you'll evaluate at the end to see if they succeeded. But the other kind is a cluster kind of evaluation where you take a look at a series of grants that you've made. Let's say that this, one of the goals of this organization is to enhance current DNR properties. Well, then you'd look at the grants and see if those grants that you made actually accomplished that larger cluster purpose as well. So both of those things are really important to us.
I guess specifically, would you send someone out to do the evaluation? Would you contract with a local person to do the evaluation?
On the individual ones, we usually do that ourselves. If we're doing these kind of cluster evaluations, we usually hire an outside expert to do that.
But somebody goes and looks.
Yeah.
That's really what I would ask.
Well, somebody doesn't go and look at every single grant we do. You know, we have photographic evidence that we get that something's been achieved and such, but we usually look at every grant that we've done over $100,000, but not every grant below that. Sometimes we do if we have questions about it, but not every grant, because it's so rare that we have problems. Actually, I was talking to Scott on Friday, and he asked me to poll my colleagues, which I did. I talked to my two other regional directors about the grants that we felt that were problematic, not grants that had had problems and failed, you know, because, you know, somebody couldn't complete it due to weather or something like that, but where there was sort of a issue where we might, you know, feel that there was fraud or some other real serious difficulty. And so I talked to my colleagues and our Western Regional Director's been there 10 years, I've been here 9.5, and our Eastern Director's been there 2 years, and we think between us we've made about 5,000 grants, and we found that in our recollection, you know, we didn't go back to the record, we found 9 that were problematic out of 5,000. So it's usually not a really big deal. The only one I have going right now that's problematic is a grant we made in New York State and upstate, where the organization just, you know, apparently went out of business, but we don't pay in advance. So it's not a real issue. It's just that, you know, we don't have an entity anymore, and so we're not going to get a final report on that grant. But the problems that we usually have in grants where we don't get the final reports and don't close it are two. Really, the most significant one is when we make a grant to government, usually the federal government, and there's some individual who gets that grant and then he's transferred to a different state. And then nobody, you know, the grants in orphan, or a university professor, and then, you know, they're doing something with a research assistant who leaves or something. And those are the kind of problematic grants we're using. It's not fraud or any kind of thing like that.
Bob?
Mr. Chair, Don, a couple things. Companies, I think last time we met, but just to be clear, the range of administrative costs would be?
Well, in here I said that we could do this for 5.25%, but that was based in part on the fact that I thought we were going to have $6 million. It might be a little bit more than that as a percentage. I guess somebody mentioned that you were going
to. We don't know what we're going to do.
Okay. Yeah. So it might be a little bit higher, but not dramatically.
Mr. Chair, on the again, I think you covered this last time, but on the governance issue, you are 501c3. So you have a board.
Right.
But I,
think I recall you saying that there would not be any need to engage the board in any of the decision makings or approval.
Correct.
Okay. And then,
they would have to approve this agreement, but they wouldn't.
Acceptance of the $X million and that, yes.
Okay.
And then the, and there's nothing that prevents you from having the council or some members of the council serve in advisory capacity.
No, I welcome that.
So, for the 5.25%, can you tell me exactly what goes into that? Just administrative costs, or is there technical support, or what?
Well, we would say that we do technical support, but it's really not the same scale at all as Bowser or the DNR. I mean, most people don't know anything about conservation. So the kind of technical support we have is the people who are working with us have master's degrees in wildlife and stuff like that, and we'll answer questions and such. But we're not going to go out and, you know, look on the ground and say, here's what you need to do and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's like a totally different scale. The things that we do, the elements are, you know, like I said, I put an enormous amount of time in solicitation. We would, you know, do a strong decision making, and then we'd administer the grants to the end. And as mentioned earlier, that usually takes about 3 years to go through the whole administration. And it's, you know, a lot of times there's changes and stuff like that. But we do not, you know, go out and look at every grant and say, here's how you do this, and then go back and look at it and say it's all done.
You would expect an organization to arrange for their own technical support if they needed it.
Right.
And some organizations will and some won't.
Correct.
If the grantee with the DNR would have its own internal, if it's a local enforcement, but they may need help from a consultant.
Right, and they would hopefully put that into the proposal.
Don, last time you were here, I ended up being confused about really kind of the access you had to technical people and so forth. Initially, you said you had 3 people in your office.
Right.
Later in that discussion, you mentioned something about I have 21 or 22 people. And
right.
At the end, there was reference to 97 people. I can
well,
square that with the...
Well, those are all accurate numbers. Let me tell you.
No fuzzy math here.
Are all in St. Paul. Okay.
Yeah.
Then the 20-some, that is our program staff in total. So, for example, I wrote some of these people's names in here on the proposal where, you know, we have our experts in wildlife and in, you know, coastal issues and all that kind of stuff. That's that group of people.
Okay, and where are those people from?
They're all over the United States, you know, from Seattle to Washington, D.C.
Okay, so then those 21 people are used to getting on airplanes and flying.
They're used to getting on airplanes or answering inquiries or whatever.
Okay.
And then the 96 is our total staff of our foundation, including the people who are grants managers, executive directors, the, you know, everybody, the HR people, you name it.
So some of the grants administration would be done out of your national office.
Correct.
Even though the grant is here, that's
correct.
Keeping and
right.
Don, in your proposal on page 5, you said you would be able to do this program for 5.25%. So that is, you mentioned 6 million is what was on the table
right.
At one time. Now, at least on our worksheet, we're around 3. That 5.25% is still of whatever that amount is.
No, I think we have to increase the percentage a bit.
Okay. So 15. 75 basis points?
Yeah.
200 basis points?
No. Well,
100.
Yeah, not
more than that.
I hate to get, you know, I hate to really get in a box without talking to our people in D.C., but, you know, I'd be really surprised if we went over, let's say, 6.5 is the highest I could imagine.
And in there, you've heard from our discussion, quite a few of these could be acquisitions that ultimately handle.
Right.
And I was unclear, do you handle those now for your grant making actual?
Yes.
fee simple acquisition?
Yes.
Okay, so that cost and all that's involved in fees and review and closing fees or whatever is involved, that's included in the 5 to 6.5%, whatever. In other words, you assume some percentage of these grants will actually be acquisitions,
right,
of property.
Right.
Would you also have the expertise to assist groups and organizations in leveraging dollars? Should you're reading leveraging dollars out there that the group did not find out about review?
We do that. I think it's going to be really a challenge in Minnesota just because there's so much here. You know, usually we will work and try to, if we like a project, you know, we try real hard to make that go. And so a lot of times I'll call other foundations or something like that to see if we can do that. But there's so much money that's going to be looking for match in Minnesota, it's going to be a challenge. But we would try to do that.
Well, I have a follow-up on Mike's question. He's talking about where the money for professional services in an acquisition grant is. The models I've seen generally carry the professional services acquisition dollars in the grant amount.
Right.
Is that the way you would generally do it?
Yes.
So that would be open.
That's a bigger problem.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure. Let me make sure that I understand that. I'm sorry.
The professional services such as appraisal, closing costs, things like that.
We would pay for an appraisal?
I'm just trying to look at what why 5.25%
right.
includes. Not necessarily appraisal, but are there a different administrative costs you as a granting organization have with an acquisition as opposed to a restoration project? That's what I'm getting.
Yeah, there are. Thanks for making that clear. There's additional handling costs. Actually, Leslie put together this thing, how the DNR goes through land acquisitions.
Oh, the powerful
Which I think I have somewhere. It goes through all these different steps, and there are many more steps for a land acquisition because of things like appraisals and, you know, deed restrictions and all that kind of stuff. And so we have to watch over all those kind of things. So it is a lot more expensive to do an acquisition than a simple habitat for him.
So, Mr. Chair, just to fill those points, and just to be clear then, if we were to grant, if the legislature were to appropriate $3 million to the Fish and Wildlife Foundation, they would get up to potentially 6.5% of that $3 million for administration.
Right.
And then on a project-by-project basis, the cost, if there were acquisition costs, would be contained within that particular project. So, for example, someone came forward, if the Waterfowl Association came forward with a $400,000 project, that $400,000 would include whatever real estate management closings cost elements would be.
Okay. Where I see it?
Yeah, that's good.
Thank you, Bill. That's actually what LCCMR uses. And it's when you work with
us, you're one of the partners
that have a fund
raising. She had a real intimidating PowerPoint slide in there.
But that's going to be the case.
No matter what. That's right.
Somebody's got to cover all of the.
Yeah, I think that's
my only point is to make sure that the council members understand where the indirect money.
Include any of that money.
Yeah.
Correct. And I think that this model is the model we'll see in most cases.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Wayne, I'm sorry to interrupt. Just kind of back to the Habitat Conservation Partnership, the cost that the initial. From Sirleaf, like the partner, the club was paying to buy the land from private individuals. Then wherever that land is turned over to whoever's going to manage it in perpetuity, there's an additional cost for that transition. So there's really two costs in that land acquisition if it isn't going directly to the long-term manager.
Well,
we heard that Lance left because I was going to ask him something, but he brought up earlier about keeping this thing simple and keeping it streamlined, and the more things I listen to, the more I'm getting told, fuck, this is this getting to be bogged down. And I think it took away from what Lance was initially talking about. Here's a pot of money, how do you get the money from here down on the ground as quick as possible without having to juggle the money back and forth as a straight shot approach. And everything I've heard is, you don't have the technical expertise, so you have to go out and get somebody else to do that. DNR won't do the private land, but they'll do the public land. Bowser will do the private land, but not the public land. And I'm wondering, maybe we need to devise one whole brand new system and do it ourselves. Or LCMR handling it? Not that I'm trying to detract.
LCMR uses the Board of Water and Soil Resources for the water quality related granting, and uses the Department of Natural Resources for the habitat related grants.
Okay.
Does anybody have?
So my question that I was getting at, where I was going to ask then, was, is part of the problem is that we haven't set up a process so we can say, yes, this fits what we do? We're all trying to figure out maybe how this would work, because I don't envision myself. I had a vision myself of how this would work, and then 2 weeks ago I found out that not everybody was sharing the same vision that I had.
Yeah,
so that's why we weren't communicating the way we should have, because I have a whole different approach than somebody else did. So would it be a lot more helpful if we said, this is the way we'd like to have it done, and does it fit?
Is there a question in the...
For you, or in the answer to what Fred is
saying? Well, I think that there are two things going on here. There's a grant process, and then there's a governmental process, which involves permitting and the final, ultimate disposition of property to DNR and stuff like that. And we can't do that. We're not government. We do this part. We do the soliciting grants, grant decisions, and making a grant, but we can't do those other parts, you know? So that's why it seems complicated, but throughout the state of Minnesota, there are foundations and corporations and all kinds of people, you know, making grants along the way, but only in that part. You can't do their job.
Is that all going to be done, though, by the time they come to us? Don't you envision that? They're going to have that state entity and water quality permits and all that included in the package before they come up here with a grant.
Or they're not going to get... be able to do the project and get the money, reimbursed.
From basic minimum requirements, here comes the grant, boom, that stuff is all done.
Well, that's it. We haven't set up about all the things that have to be done before it gets to
But I can envision someone coming to us and saying, this is what I want to get done. And then a grant award is made, and then they have to go get a number of permits now that they know they have money in hand to be able to do that work, and then they can do that, and then they'll get reimbursed for the work when it's done. If they can't get the permits, the money doesn't ever get out in the field. And so I don't see it possible for everyone to have permits in hand before they come and apply for money, because that's almost impossible to do. And it's a huge burden on an applicant to have permit-ready projects if they don't get the money.
Mm-hmm. Is there any more questions for Don?
Don, you were created by Congress. You and I have had a side conversation, but could just for the benefit of the group, are there any laws that your organization is bound by that might be potentially a problem because we operate under state rules and...
No, I don't think so. We do a lot of different state programs. We have a program with the Washington State Conservation Board, for example. We do a grants program for them, and they're like the Bowser of Washington State. We do something like the Washington State Salmon Recovery Board, State of California DNR. The only thing that I can think of that might be any issue whatsoever is that by federal statute, we have to notify the congressional district where we make a grant. That's literally it. That's the only thing that we, you know, whoever's in that congressional district, we send them a letter.
Would you notify the state legislators at the same time?
We can, sure, no problem.
Les?
I'm kind of looking at John's list of items, and it looks like you've got the capability going down about halfway, and then we got to find another organization to, after we make the grant payment, who do we do the project? A lot of the evaluation is going to have to be done at the field. We're not going to get away from not evaluating every project out there. And doing the report of the results, and doing the audits, the scientific and the dollars audit. So you're saying that the rest of those follow-up projects you don't really do. Do you want a copy of that? Just
yeah. Yes. Well, we would say that we do those things. It's just because of the nature of government, you do it
much more intensely. That's what I would say. We do evaluations. I'm telling you that we do thousands of grants and we don't have problems. And one of the reasons is we take a long time to make those decisions. But when you're government, you know, it's ultimately on to you. You know, if we make a grant with federal dollars like we do every day, and there's some problem, what we do is we go back to whoever gave us the money, EPA, Forest Service, or whatever, and say, well, here, this is a problem. But it's extremely rare. But, you know, that's why they have to be, in some respects, more thorough. There's no question about it. My point is that these steps are not all grant steps. They're, half of them are grant steps, and half of them are the recipient. Right. You know, whoever receives that property has to go through those steps. So we can't do that. So I hope that answers the question.
Mr. Chair Johnson, when you get money from the Forest Service or EPA or whoever else it is, they audit.
Yes.
Right. And so they send out auditors and they audit you and work out the grants.
Right.
Any other questions for Don? One for Don?
Based on what your organization set up, how do you go about getting that solicitation out for proposals that you first alluded to?
Well, we do it in a variety of ways. It totally depends on a particular program. I mean, some programs, you know, we just put it on our website. You know, if we have a really big national program that's really well known, we'll do that, particularly if we have partners with us. Like, we have a program called Five Star, which has more applications than the other, and it's with the US EPA. So we put it on their website, they put it on their website, and just that alone, we get about 750 applications every year. But the smaller the program, the more you have to get out and really, you know, get engaged. And that's why, for this proposal, I suggested that we would try to get every one of those groups, and more if we can find them, to convey the message about this. That's part of it. And the other part is, I think it's critical for us to get out, get in the car, and drive around and have meetings, have regional meetings, so that people know that we've been to Thief River Falls or War Road, or at least we've heard of them. You know, because that's how you establish fairness, I think, is to show people that you care enough to go there.
If we were to go with a proposal with you, are we bound for a year, 2 years? How does that work?
Well, you'd have to do it for a year. Frankly, I think it'd be better to do it for 3 years, but it's so new that I don't know.
The reason I asked them, it's kind of a work in progress, as you can tell, so we needed to be thrown out there. I didn't know how many years we'd be looking at something.
If it were a year agreement, not all of the grants would be complete.
Correct.
In a year.
Right. But you basically just write it in such a way that, you know, the authority would continue for a couple of years. We do that a lot.
It would be for the amount of money granted. And for the period done.
Yeah.
Or up to a period done.
But would the administration continue in year two and year three?
Right.
For the remainder.
Have to write it that way.
Okay.
Any more questions for Don? Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
Well, the way it's been explained to me by Mr. Becker is that we have two nights yet for the balance of this meeting to determine who we want to have as our grants administrator and what specific language we want in the bill that we send out.
Scott, I wonder, you know, we've got a number of potential groups that would receive these grants. I wonder if we possibly hear from some of these groups on here and see if they have any input on the process. I see Ryan and Joel and John or anybody else that potentially might want to comment on it.
We'll open up the floor up to those comments. Stand and give us your comment. Please stand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Becky Knoll. I'm a plant ecologist and planner with the Leaf Lake Band of the Ojibwe. Now, I apologize that I haven't been to previous meetings. I could always come down here at certain times. So I don't have a background of what you do, but it's interesting to hear that if Bowser focuses on private land and the DNR, I believe it was a comment that this work would all be, these funds would be applied to wildlife management areas. So representing a tribe who has vested interest in landscape scale resource management cross ownership, you know, I wonder if the tribes are going to be included in this process. I was interested in this gentleman's approach. Tribes traditionally or historically only own a very small portion of their reservation land mass, and yet they've got treaty rights and historical cultural interest in the entire land mass. So the Leaf Lake Reservation is 860,000 acres. And so the Leaf Lake Band, in order to have an impact on how those resources are being managed and the habitats are being enhanced, we're working very actively with landscape scale projects. We're very active with the Minnesota Forest Resource Council. We're active with the Leech Lake Watershed Foundation and Bowser and other conservation interests. And so I'm wondering if you folks have decided how your funds are going to be, you know, what the criteria for awarding the grants are. And will it take into account that a lot of the habitat, or a lot of the projects, like the proposal that we would put forward, would include pine restoration, cross ownership, protection of high value shoreland.
We are not in the process of determining at this minute the priorities for project approval. We are in the process of picking or making a decision as to who's going to be our grant administrator, and then we will, once that's done, then we are going to work towards, you know, whatever those priorities that need to be in the law are, and then the process will evolve further. But we're looking for comments as to who you think might be the best administrator. Joe, in the back.
I won't say who would be the best administrator, but I think the question you have is, and I hear some of the comments from the council members, is you have a role of a fiscal agent, that is somebody who is going to do the check writing and grant solicitations, and then you have the role of who's doing the project. And I see some of that overlapping here in some of the discussion. For instance, Pheasants Forever is to apply for a given grant here. And if it was to Bowser or NIPWIP or DNR, we would have to apply to there to the agency. And then we would do the work, say it's a grassland restoration on a WMA. We would then, there's several different layers of to consider here. And I think the big thing you got to get over is who's going to be the fiscal agent. And then you got to decide what level of responsibility you want them to have. And that is, are they just going to run the books? Are they going to solicit and run the books? Are they going to solicit and actively follow and track the project? I mean, so there's different roles here. And and I think, you know, Senator Ambrose brought up the point, is someone going to come in here with all of the kind of the preliminary work done in advance? Mr. Hartwell made a great point. You're not going to do all that preliminary work betting on the come if it's, you know, follows that it's a big project and you're going to put a lot of labor and active work into getting there. So to me, I think what you need to determine is who's best going to serve that role of fiscal agent the most efficiently and effectively. And because there's you know, depending on the types of grants and how that grant, Clay just brought up a number of good questions, but that's kind of the next phase, is what are the priorities going to be, and how are we going to, what's our target, and that's going to take a little bit of time to develop that, I know. So I think the big thing is, who's going to handle the money and the solicitations, and that should be, in my view, your first step. And But then you later on those other things, it gets more complicated.
Sir?
Mike Carlson, Optimization Environmental Consulting. I think the pattern that I see from, you know, especially these days from, you know, President Obama to Governor Valenti to within the DNR to, you know, any county or local entity is that are the dollars we're spending being spent effectively? That's the question on the table. And if the administration of these funds, if the oversight and administration of the funds is going to include the answering of that question, that's great, but if not, if that should be in this, the early thought process, are we going to be able to say by whom we choose to administer this money that X acres were restored at the price of X dollars per acre, that the amount of contaminants in this watershed went down by this much, or turbidity went down by this much, because we spent this much in this watershed? Have they thought ahead of time to say, we're isolating these grants by watershed and these grants by ecoregion, because that makes sense in the context of what they're trying to do? If they aren't able to lend that for either supported by cost, manpower, or anything else to lend that kind of analysis to where the money is being spent and whether it's effective, then you're at an end game coming out the other end of the tunnel. You're going to be left kind of holding the bag as it relates to answering questions from the public about whether these dollars are spent effectively. Is kind of my short opinion.
Thank you. Anybody else? Ma'am?
Really, Kirsten. Having worked with the DNR and with LCCMR grants, just a couple of notes that I have a lot of experience with the DNR providing grants to nonprofits and to local governments, as well as on DNR lands and other publicly owned lands, and that hasn't been an issue. It seemed to be a question that hasn't been cleared up, that they work on private lands as well as public lands. So I just want to clarify, I think the DNR staff
always... I was actually going to make that.
Okay, thank you. Just thought that was still a big question out there. And that, it sounds like, I love Joe's comment, that there's a fiscal role that public agencies do very well, private as well, but the solicitation, the getting the promotion of the grant program could be another entity. It doesn't have to be any of those you have assembled here. You could have a separate part of your budget go towards having somebody be a circuit rider. There are a lot of circuit riders in the room right here, but not necessarily promoting anyone to do that, but that could be a role that you potentially separate from the person who does the agency that does the fiscal agency. And then finally, with evaluation, that's a bigger thing than this grant program and then even the heritage money, the habitat money by itself. I would hope that the evaluation of clean water benefits, habitat benefits, park and trail benefits, all of those can be done consistently and effectively and efficiently, that might be something that the legislature and your group evaluate together instead of having evaluators in separate sections. So look at some efficiency across the Clean Water Land Legacy Amendment for that, and I think that the public will get more efficiency for their public dollars.
Thank you.
Scott Judge, Sorrento Municipal Water Plant Association. A lot of good comments. Thank you, folks, for doing your good work. I'm just going to kind of dovetail on some of the things. I agree with Joe, Corey, and this gentleman here. We have to get the most bang for the buck. We have to be cost effective and accountable and quantifiable. I think there's something that's valued to be said in a little bit of the independence as well. I think if we had an entity that oversaw small grants fund, that was a bit more independent, that carries a certain amount of value as well. And I'll let it just go there.
Thank you. Paul.
Paul Langseth. I'm with Nolens County Soil and Water Conservation District. I'm not representing them officially. I'm just giving my opinion. Soil and Water Conservation Districts do a lot of solicitation for grants, but almost all of our grants are on private land. And so this would be a change for Soil and Water Conservation Districts. We work closely with a lot of the watershed districts as well. Les, who's sitting next to me, represents ONO, which is within Nobles County. We work back and forth on a lot of cost share items. And I see this program with the small grants, whether it's Bedman's Brothers, Ducks Unlimited, whoever's applying, to get that local expertise in the soil and water conservation district, even though we may not be able to play a direct role if it is on public property. But I see benefits in going outside of the bureaucracy. I think that that doesn't mean that DNR and Bowser won't have a role in it down the road somewhere, but I think there's some benefit there.
Any other public comment? Thank you. What I'd like to do, I mean, as Bill has explained it to me, we have to make a presentation to the full board tomorrow, which we're almost all here anyway, but we need to decide who's going to be the administrator of the small grants program and try to determine any language we want written in the bill. And what I'd like to do, if none of you, if you're all okay with it, is to dispense with the formality and have our meeting formalities and just have an open discussion, get each person's opinion, see if we have consensus, you know, and go from there.
Well, I don't know if you recall, but my last meeting, I was really conflicted. I could hear, I could understand arguments from both sides. I've done a lot of thinking about it in the last couple of weeks, and listening tonight has been very helpful. I really am coming down on the independent entity. I think that Don and company have, from what I saw last 2 weeks ago, great credibility. There's no question about that. There's clearly experience. And maybe most importantly, I think that eliminates once and for all even the appearance of conflict of interest. I mean, DNR and Bowser are going to be involved. I don't know how you can separate. Maybe it isn't really a conflict of interest, but I think there's a perception. There's a real risk that there's a perception. And it seems to me that the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation solved that problem.
Want to just kind of go around? You want to go, Dave? We'll just work the way around.
I disagree. I think there's a great advantage to being independent, and I think Bowser has a struggle with private lands, and DNR doesn't know exactly how they're going to handle it, and Fish and Wildlife Foundation has a proposal that makes sense, and they're ready to go. So if we have to make a decision today, I go with something I know.
Wayne?
More confused than I was before. Because I still look at this and I guess I get this process, you know, in my mind, and in the process that I'm thinking of goes better with a public entity. But if we only want to use it only for the fiscal agent and give that fiscal agent directions on what to do.
That's what we're
going to do. If that's the case, then I can definitely see the side of going with an independent body. However, I just then on the other side, and keep looking and saying, you know, we have agencies out there already that are kind of in line to be able to do this. I hate to develop a whole new process. It doesn't solve. I'm kind of mixed. I'm all over the board with this one.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm with Darby and David on this. I think I feel more comfortable with the independent group for the reasons they stated. I just think it would be a cleaner, easier process. And DNR and Bowser are going to have to be part of this process anyway. They're gonna be part of it. There's just not going to be any way around that. So. For the physical agent and for the person who's going to go out and promote these grants, I think I would go with an independent.
Bob?
I think come down to the, I'm going to call it four C's, it's really only three C's and the A. Conflict, competency, cost, and accountability. Those are the four things I think about. I think it starts with the conflict issue. If you can't get past the conflict issue, then everything else falls apart. And it seems that we have a conflict issue with Bowser and DNR, and the risk that they're facing now. Then the next is competency. I think obviously they're all three potentially are certainly competent organizations and have experience in fish and wildlife management experience. Though Bowser, to Jim's point, I think was exactly the right question. That is not in their mission. It's a secondary component of theirs. I think cost is pretty straightforward. You know, we heard 6.5%. Let's see if we can get that down a little bit, but I think that's an important thing. And you know, in Bowser's case, you know, up to 20%, I think maybe, again, it's a challenge. And then accountability, I think all of them have the potential to be fully accountable. And so I think, you know, as we make recommendations that safeguards the public interest, I think that's important. But I think one thing I think about, though, is, I mean, we've asked these folks to come to us with a presentation, and really what we're asking them to do is to read the mind of a schizophrenic. And I think that's a little bit, you know, a little bit unfair in some respects. So,
Mike.
Well, I'm leaning towards the foundation, and what really put me over the top on that was when Don mentioned other states, that state agencies that have relied on the foundation to administer the program. My biggest concern was that as an entity created by Congress, they're going to operate under some potentially different sets of laws and rules, or our state laws and rules might be in conflict with their procedure, whatever. But hearing that, Don, you do successfully manage grant programs for, and I hope it's more than a couple states, but other states and other states in this area, gave me that level of comfort that I guess I was I wasn't there up until I heard that. So that to me was helpful because, you know, as a chair, I'm going to have to help make that case for the legislature why something totally different than our tried and true state agencies, whether it be the Board of Water and Soil Resources Department, would be the logical place to put this program. And so I'm in my mind trying to build that case, and that really helped build the case.
Well, the only politician at the table, who one would think that everybody would think I got to just really talk on and on and on about something. Everything's been, you know, pretty convincing to me that I think the conflict is really big with me as well. So the National Federation is my thing, and also keeping in mind Wayne's concern too. I too am very concerned about the streamlining thing here. We've been talking about that since day one, and we've got to stay focused on that.
Brad,
all right, it's getting clearer. I was having difficulty with Don's presentation as far as the total follow-through, and that's when I drew a line between 7A and 8 and divided them. Fiscal responsibility of possibly letting the NFWF handle the fiscal and use the existing organizations that are very competent and in place, that being SWCD, Bowser, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, DNR, and those organizations all partnering, again, with Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, and so forth. So we split it up because I do not feel comfortable that NFW could handle really anything from number 8 on down as far as doing the projects, evaluating the projects, reporting the results, doing the audits, and doing the real total final follow-up on that. So If we separated, really separated the functional elements of this, of how we're going to accomplish it, do the first part, and then start partnering with the people that are right in the field, because NFWF is not going to be able to interface at that local level adequately that we could do with 91 SWCDs in the field, partnering with the local government units to make sure that these projects are cleared with the local government units, because if we don't get that interface and that interaction, we're not going to get the projects done. That has to be done on a low level, a local government unit level basis.
Thank you. And I'm going to come in. It's nice to see that we have as much consensus among the group as we do. I too lean to the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, but for similar but different reasons. I know that the expertise on the ground lies with the DNR and the rest of those folks, and I want them to be involved in that project ongoing or initially. I want them to, those entities to be on record that they like the project, that they want the project to move forward, so that we can filter out about 75% of all the projects we would get, okay? If they can't weigh in until afterwards, okay, the grant administrator is going to wade through many projects that have no chance of being funded, okay? If we get, if as part of our small grants program, you need a letter from an SWCD or a Fish and Wildlife, Fish and Wildlife agent or wildlife area manager, we are then going to be able to filter dramatically the projects that continue to go forward. And so because those people would be, DNR or soil and water conservation personnel would be recommending the project, okay, that makes that conflict definite. And I want them involved from the ground up, from the very beginning, and so my indication would be to go with the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation.
Scott, would it be, I guess I'd like to just hear from Bill, because Bill has been doing a lot of the communication day in and day out with these folks. Given what you heard around the table, Bill, are there some things that we're not aware of in terms of concerns about whether it be the foundation or Bowser or DNR and just the relationships we're talking about that we need to be aware of? Do you feel comfortable with what you heard in the last 15 minutes?
The major concern I have is the one that you shared with the council, and that's getting the legislature to accept the foundation as an administrator when we've got Bowser, DNR capable of doing it. But what I've heard here today is that no matter which way you go, there's an added cost. You're going to have, there's no free lunch in the grant business, apparently. And we're going to have to pay for it one way or the other. So, in my way of thinking, as long as we get the federal, state, and in some cases perhaps local county agencies involved in the process in terms of vetting the project, approving the project, being in early on the project, I think that the foundation is a reasonable way to approach a difficult problem.
Another point, I'll just say that one of the things we have to say is that in the presentation to the legislature, one thing to say is, you know, we're mindful that one of the threshold issues for members of the legislature is to be aware of the issues of conflict. And when they exist, they're a problem. And so I think we land here on that first threshold issue.
That's correct.
One of the things that I did do, in my mind, when I was trying to make the decision, I mean, I had no concern whatsoever about Bowser's ability to do the job or the DNR's ability to do the job. The National Fish and Wildlife Foundation was an unknown to me. I actually spoke with four or five people that they do grants for, and they were from all over, from Chicago and Washington and lots of places. And the programs that they administered, those grant organizations were also very, very satisfied. So that gave me confidence that my unknown. What's that?
Because they got money.
No, I'm talking about the organizations that gave money to the Fish and Wildlife Foundation to manage for them. Those people were very satisfied with the way that was done, and that kind of took out the unknown for me a little bit.
Getting to the next step of the process, once we've reached a consensus with the council, are we going to put a bill together to have Senator Engelbrecht sell to the Senate and pick a House sponsor and make sure, because we've got the technical and logical nailed down, but the political may be the difficult road to go. In your packet is the section of the bill that would deal with the grant program. It is a draft, and there were two things that we needed to do today. One was to fill in the capital A's. I think sounds to me like we've got a recommendation for that. And the other thing that had to be done today was to add criteria as the group sees fit to recommend to the full council.
So the discussion, Mr. Chair, now is about criteria and this language. One of the things I would suggest we add to the language, there will be some acknowledgement that the council would serve as an advisor to foundation.
Would we want to add in there that the grants are taxable? To no profit?
Not our determination.
No.
Yeah, we have we've gone down the road of criteria. Back when we
were going to be talking about
the process back in January of criteria for grants, you know, consistent with the law and the Constitution. I'm sorry, I don't remember all of them, but those are certainly component parts to be incorporated. They're appropriate in this case.
Do we want a more streamlined criteria for this? I mean, I've read through our criteria, and they are very thorough. You know, they cover pretty much all aspects of what a funding project could be. Do we, in an effort to streamline our small grants program, do we want 10 criteria these are only criteria that have to be written in the law. The criteria can be developed over time, right?
Right.
It's only the criteria that we want in the law that we have to worry about now.
I think I'd go exactly the opposite way and say it's important for us to have specific criteria in the law because that's what, number one, the legislators are going to look at, and two, what the contract with the Fish and Wildlife Foundation would be based on. I mean, one of the things I picked up in here is there's nothing about permanently protected property.
Right.
And boy, we don't want to miss things like that. It's really important that we be specific so we don't wake up and find out that we weren't specific, therefore the grants aren't specific and we wish they were something different.
And I'd be careful too that we don't, if we put those criteria in a law, that we're not limited to just them. I guarantee you, we'll put it into law, and the first application will come in and say, damn, we should have thought about this other criteria. So we have to have some flexibility in it as well. I think I'm with David, though, Scott, on the issue of being streamlined or not. The only difference between the small grants program and everything else is the amount of money. The criteria should still be the same regardless of if it's a dollar or $1 million.
Could we use exactly the same criteria then for our other program and just add it to this?
Maybe that's a starting point, please.
To drop that in and make it longer.
The list of 14?
I think we should have
14.
Can we get some counsel from our council, Greg?
Yeah, as to whether this should be.
Could you help us out a little bit, Greg, on the level of specificity, Mr. Chair, that is appropriate for an appropriations writer? In other words, how much do we need to decide tonight versus how much can we decide tonight and then work on over the intervening month until this program becomes operational?
Well, you have to decide whatever you're going to make certain is going to happen. Right? I mean, before you, you know, you can advise later on. I think I've mentioned this before. And the council has no authority to beyond advisory. And so, whatever you want to have included in this, you need to have it included now.
So you're saying the what we talked about here, the criteria as we've been talking about should be in statute?
Well, not necessarily. Yeah. It's just in a rider like this. This is just the appropriation law. But you should have, if you want to make sure that the land is protected, if you want to make sure that public has access to the land, I mean, those sorts of things should be written in now.
And that's in our other criteria, is it not? About access.
Well, that's the Constitution. If it's an acquired piece of property, you know, OHF.
I was talking about non-acquisition portion. If that's only for the Constitution, it's only for acquired land. We require the fee.
So, Greg, we talked about, you know, the foundation being the fiscal agent and administering the contract, but we also talked about the department and the staff of Board of Water and Soil Resources provide that expertise in the field at some level. Does that need to be written in, the roles of Bowser and DNR?
It depends if you want it to be just formally established, but if you want to formally establish that, I think you're going to appropriate plus the money to do that, too.
Yeah, we don't know how much money it would be, and I go back to that should be in the grant request from each individual organization. If they need technical support, they ought to be asking for technical support.
Well, I was talking about review. I'm talking about just review. You know, a Conrad Gun Club has proposals before it gets to the foundation.
I think we ought to let the foundation do it. We're hiring them to be the experts. They do this work all the time.
So you're saying
land acquisition, to do restoration work. Why wouldn't we use them versus put a whole other layer in the process?
I think whatever technical expertise they want, they put in the grant. Okay? I mean, and if they use DNR initially and the project doesn't get funded, I mean, hopefully they won't have tons of time tied up in that preliminary look. But I think I agree with Dave. If you have a $100,000 project and you've talked to somebody and they've determined that technical expertise is going to be 2 or 3%, and you put that in the grant and it gets funded that way, I don't know that it has to be written in, you know, as a mandate, because they may use somebody different.
Well, and more importantly, we don't know what's going to come from the field. Is it going to be restoration projects? Is it going to be acquisition projects? Is it going to be on forests? Is it going to be on prairies? We can't figure out how to create a technical assistance pool for one type of project, not knowing what projects are coming in. I don't think it makes sense to do that.
Mr. Chair, what I was referring to was, I thought we had talked about having someone, some entity, sign off before it goes to...
That's a criteria. That's not a funding thing.
Well, it is, in fact, if there's a 200 grants, and they're all being asked to be reviewed by the DNR and their field staff, then it becomes a funding issue. That's where I was going. I wasn't talking about once it gets to the foundation.
But if it's in a self-interest, for the most part, if DNR is going to have land restored that DNR owns as part of a grant, it's in their self-interest to sign off and say, yeah, we actually want to have that done. And this is a decent plan to do.
Less than
we have to take it one step further, too, to meet the dictates of the Constitution as far as not only land acquisition, but perpetual easement with access. We haven't addressed that yet. We're not ready to get to that point, but I don't think we want to cut that major portion out.
If that's in our criteria, though, of our other funding criteria, and we add that to the bill, that should be addressed there, correct?
Well, it's, you know, all we got here is the acquisition of land, and I think when we get down the pike, we're going to have a major portion that's going to be easement with access.
But they're talking about adding our funding criteria, which includes those easement issues, and adding that to this language, correct?
That I would go along with.
Don?
I wonder if it'd be possible to just take a certain amount of money and set it aside that, you know, would be that if you need a technical assistant, there'd be little, you know, really abbreviated grants process, a one-page sheet that explained that, and you could apply for X thousand dollars, maybe up to $3,000-$4,000 to either Bowser or DNR. That would come in, and that'd be just an expedited thing. You could have a virtually instant decision and get the support from one or the other.
Could that grant be made from the foundation to them?
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's just suggest a tool that's used by Metro Greenway and used by the Transportation Advisory Board. They have a technical assistance group that does technical review, and I think it does make sense to have it in Minnesota based, and then that would advise the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. Metro Greenway has had an advisory group and a technical working group, and Alexander helped set that up this year also. I think others are familiar with other advisory groups.
And I think
they could be appointed by the Fred Upper Heritage Council.
And on the large, grants portion of that, you know, the 125 to 400, if that makes it through the process, then I think there'd be more of that. I don't know how much time and energy you're going to spend initially on a $25,000 application. Probably not anywhere near the amount required from the larger grant, you know. So I talked to lots of area wildlife personnel, you know, and they know that implementing those are going to take a lot of time. I never really had a whole lot of concern about, boy, they bring it to me, I look at it, I say, yeah, I like it, or no, I don't. You know, they don't take responsibility for implementation or the fact that the person who gets the grant, you know, is a response. I mean, they're just signing off that they think the project's good.
Scott, the limit could be in order to go through these things that have got the X's and the A's and the C's and start going through and filling these things in and having an actual motion for a recommendation to the full council on these things so that the A's could be and WF and then come up with that value as we go.
It's a little premature to put an amount in.
Okay, well, not to amount them, but then at least have a motion that we could recommend then FWF to be the fiscal representative. And then if that be it, so that's my motion, and then we'll at least be able to carry forward to the full council.
Okay. Wayne's made a motion to name the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation as our grants administrator. Is there any more discussion? That would be none. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
There you go.
What? Would it be appropriate that every year we just give Bowser and DNR X amount of dollars every year for technical assistance? And Bowser do the private land, have DNR do the public land, and just come up with a number we can both agree on, and whenever we have to use it, we can go either one of them. And
how would you do that? We don't know what the scope and nature is, the number of projects.
We have to be a little careful that we don't get into the planting too, of just providing a budget.
Well, they would have to come to the at the end of the year, there'd have to be an audit that they did so much, and it would just facilitate the process where you're not having enough.
One of the questions is, would there ever be an entity that would provide technical support that wouldn't be them?
Well, one of the things we could do is we could provide a set amount, up to a set amount, to the grant administrator to re-grant to DNR Bowser to help people put together their proposals.
And we would have to add the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to
you
that.
You could do anything you want. You could just set us an amount aside for technical assistance within the small grants program and let them allocate it on some fair basis that they come up with.
But I think there could be circumstances where it's not DNR or Bowser.
Yep.
The EU could do local engineering work.
I think that would be a great idea.
Yeah. With 3%.
Well, 3% would be, you're looking at
anything
total.
Put in there is more than they got now.
3%. That's what Jim was mentioning.
Yeah, I'm good with
that. Well, if you have a...
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
You know, part of what we need is to do something and then discover if it works or not, because this is all...
Yeah.
So
a learning process.
Well, you know, I say Edison, you know, makes like 10,000 mistakes.
Yep.
You know, before he got the one.
Yep.
And the 10% available to the grant program management is now 6.5.
I think